Say hello to the former mayor of Racine, His Honor. Well, formerly His Honor. John Dickert is here. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Wow. Look at you. It's really you in the room. Look, you're ready to take notes and everything.
No pads ready to go.
You know what this is going to be? Because someday you're going to say, well, Don Rosen said on this date, this is, we have it in the court case when I'm up on some trial or something. You're going to say, listen, I have the notes here. I don't know what I'll be on trial for. Yeah, that one says Bart Simpson. And they say, what are you going to be on trial for someday? Oh, teacher planted evidence in my locker. Okay, now, the former mayor, you didn't want to run again. And I got to ask you, why didn't you want to run again?
Well, there's a couple things. The first thing is elections are hard on your kids and your family. But the second thing is my daughter said, you know, Daddy, I want you back home.
Aww.
So, you know, when your little ones are saying, hey, we want you back around, it's, you know, it really kind of tells you that it's time. The other thing is we put together, you know, we had a plan for the city. It was a 10-year plan, and we did it pretty much about 99% of it in 8 years. And one of the things that my wife said to me is she asked me to, you know, look back at the plan. How are you done? So, because when we were talking about running again, and when I looked at it and said we got about 99% of it done, she said, so what are you going to do? You're going to be bored. And I thought to myself, okay. But the big factor was the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence Cities Initiative coming and saying, we really want you to think about this job. And that was, you know, when you have those two things going together, your family saying, you know, maybe it's time. And somebody saying, hey, we're going to present you with something that, you know, you've always been part of. Then those two things really come to mesh pretty quick.
You ever want to do politics again? I'll put it this way. Do you ever get the bug to do politics again?
Well, I think it's not so much the bug to do politics, because I think part of the problem in today's society is everybody wants to be something, right? They want the title. What I worry about is the job. So do I think about, you know, doing the job and getting into a space where we can make dramatic change? I always think about that. That's why I got into consulting after working for the governor. It's, you know, I wanted to make dramatic change, and that's, you know, what I'm trying to do with the job that I'm doing now. So I don't see it as really so much, you know, getting back into being a politician. You know, Rich Daley always had a great phrase, which is we're not politicians, we're mayors, because we have to deal with everything. We can't worry about the politics. We have to just deal with the stuff on the ground.
I'd last 9 seconds in that job. 9 seconds, because the first time somebody opened their mouth, I'd tell them what I thought, and then I'd be out.
No, so, not necessarily.
Oh, yeah, necessarily. Trust me. 9 seconds, I'd be done with that job, any political job, because I would never keep my mouth shut. I don't know how to, you know, if somebody says something that I really think is stupid, I'm going to say, what are you, stupid? And that would be it. My career's over.
Well, you know, nowadays, we never know.
Right? Yeah, right. Nowadays,
there's a lot of crazy things being talked about right now. But, you know, to me, it comes down to the point where, you know, I'm older now than I am younger, that's for sure. But it comes down to the point of what do you want to accomplish in life? And for me, with the consulting I'm doing now or anything I'm going to do until I retire is, you know, make the planet a better place for our kids.
Let's talk about that, because you left to deal with water.
Yeah.
Water. And people say, well, water. I got water everywhere. I turn on my tap. I got water. For now, you do. You and I talked about this movie, The Big Short. And the movie was about the housing bust, where everything went, Goldman Sachs went out of business. People lost their homes. It was a big, giant bubble that burst. And the movie was called The Big Short. And one of the people that predicted it was a doctor, played by Christian Bale in the film. He had all this math done. He said, this is going to happen. And after it happened, at the end of the movie, the last thing he does, they put on the screen, now he's going to deal with water. And people in the theater went, what do you mean water? What's going on with water? Tap's not going to work, water. So I ask you, why was he so concerned about water?
Well, a couple things. People have to have water to survive, number one. Number two, the amount of fresh water in the world is minute.
Yeah, we look at the oceans, but you can't drink that stuff.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And to process it to drink it is very energy intensive, and you're left with a brine that's kind of somewhat dangerous. So the thing that he was looking at was that with all this limited fresh water, and we are blessed with the Great Lakes, right? We have all this fresh water around us. When we think, what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is that's a very, very small percentage of what we have on this planet to drink. So it's very precious. So what he looked at was the technology. And I think what he may have seen was that while we look at the water now and we go, well, you know, we have the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, so we've been cleaning up our water. There's a whole new level of things that have come up. When I was a kid, they were dumping water into the river, you know, direct pollution, not cleaning it through the wastewater treatment plant, and that was causing the problem. Well, we cleaned that up, but now you have invasive species, you have plastics in the water, you have PFAS in the water. You know,
okay,
you have lead.
Stop at PFAS, because yeah. I have that listed here. I never heard it said like that before until this morning. PFAS, what are those?
Yeah, so the best way to describe it, the word, the name of it is so long that, you know, most people forget it in a heartbeat. But what it happens is back during World War II, for the most part, when they were doing the Manhattan Project, they had to have something that was really, really a strong bonding agent that would prevent fire and other things like that from penetrating certain levels. So they created this chemical, which is considered by many to be the strongest bond man's ever created. It's three carbon chains with, I believe, a fluorine chain, and then three more carbon chains. So it's this seven-chain link product that we created as humans. It's the kind of things that they put on the heat shield for the space missions. It's what's in firefighting foam. That's why they can put the foam on a fire and it doesn't just burn through it. It's in your nonstick pans. It's on your clothing, to make your clothing water resistant. So in other words, it's in the public space and it has been since the 50s. There was a great movie done by Mark Ruffalo, one of our locals from Kenosha. And the, boy, let me think for a second. I'll remember the movie in a second, but the movie shows that in the 90s, he was a chemical attorney, and he found that because his mom called him about a neighbor who was a farmer whose cows were dying. So he went out there to check it out, and the farmer was complaining that the stream behind his house was being contaminated by a chemical plant up the way. So he starts looking into it, and he finds out through all this research that I think it was a 3M plant, was dumping into this stream. The cows were drinking it. They're drinking PFAS. And so their bodies were basically getting very, very large, and then they would die. So he starts looking into it and finds that, yes, this is, it's a really, really bad chemical. And for the most part, as I recall, it gets into your liver and your brain, creates, once it bioaccumulates, it causes cancer. And it's very, very deadly. So we've had this stuff in our system for a long, long time. As a matter of fact, just about every living organism on the planet has PFAS in it, including, you know, whales and things like that that they found underneath, yes, dark waters. That's the movie by Mark Ruffalo, correct? They found it in, you know, animals in the Antarctic. So we've been using this for so long, and they've been dumping it for so long, many times illegally, that this has seeped through into the water systems, and so it bioaccumulates. Now, let me give you an example of how bad this is. Some of these facts may not be 100%, but I think I'm pretty close on it. The federal level for PFAS, for acceptability, is what they call 4 PPT, which is 4 parts per trillion. That's like taking one drop of water in 4 Olympic swimming pools. That's considered okay, all right, if you're drinking water with 4 PPT or less. I asked the governor to put me on in some water space while I was working for revenue. So I sat on the committee that designed the rules, regs, and budget for PFAS for Wisconsin. We had it at about 20 PPT. The feds came in lower. So we had to lower our standard. There is a city up north, and I won't name it because I don't want people candidly bothering those folks. But it's a very small community up way up north. They tested at 46,000 PPT. So basically, they're drinking pure poison. Now, in my estimation, it's pure poison. The state came in, and some of the elected officials up there said, oh, this is all nonsense. This is all made up nonsense. So they tested it again. It was 47,000 parts per trillion. The amount of cancer victims that are in that community, I think, may rate as number one in the country per capita.
This is like Erin Brockovich.
Yeah. Oh, this puts Erin Brockovich to shame. Erin Brockovich, what she did was nothing compared to what they found with PFAS. And not to say, not to, you know, downsize what Erin Brockovich did. She's a great woman and did great research, right? But this is at a level that exceeds everything that they were doing, because this is global. And
do these people know they're drinking bad water?
Well, they were told by people that they weren't.
And
they kept drinking it.
But if the cancer rate's going up, I mean, you...
The former mayor that was there, who is a proponent to get this stopped and cleaned up, has had 23 surgeries. And I think he's had 4 different bouts of cancer. And the death rate in the community that they're in was at 65, then down to 60, 50s, now it's in the 40s. So 40-year-olds are dying from drinking this stuff that they've drank in the past. Now, the DNR and everybody have come in and said, okay, stop. We're going to give you, you know, bottled water for now. And by the way, we don't know what's in bottled water, so sometimes there's PFAS in bottled water. Yeah, I know. Look at your bottled water. Because
this is spring water.
Yeah, but most bottled water is not tested. If it is, it's tested so in a limited manner. But I always tell everybody, drink your tap water. It's likely far better than bottled water.
You know what it is?
Water.
You say that, and I drink tap water, and it's just like, I don't like the taste of it. It's just not refreshing to me. I told you once before, my wife goes to, what's it, Petrifying Springs? And she gets the water out of that...
Mm-hmm.
Artesian well, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And she gets it there. And we used to run it through a filter. And you said, stop doing that. And she stopped.
Yeah, because you'd filter out all the good stuff.
So now we load up one of those big bottles. And every week, and she drinks only that water. I tried it. It doesn't taste good. I don't like the taste. Because I'm so used to this, ice mountain water.
Yeah.
And there is, in Milwaukee, Rod Lancer is no longer with us. But he was one of the founders of Summerfest. And he was also the comptroller for the city of Milwaukee. He took my mother, father, and I on a tour of Milwaukee. He wanted to test it out with us. And he took us to this street. It's a residential street. And there's a line of people with bottles filling it up. And it just drips out 24/7. And it's right out of the ground. That's where the well comes up, right on this person's, right on the sidewalk. And people bring their bottles and fill it up. And it's fresh water.
Yeah. And, you know, all water we should test, right? We're blessed with the Great Lakes and the fact that since we have so much water out there, any PFAS that gets in the Great Lakes for the most part is diluted to a point where it's not a problem, right? So for us, even though we're pulling in water from the Great Lakes, they may test at 1 or 0 PPT just because it's so diluted.
Well, how do you know when you're drinking sludge?
Well, that's why we test our water all the time. But I mean, constantly.
But you said this Ice Mountain may not be tested. How do you know if it's tested?
Well, the rules and regs for testing bottled water are very, very light. And we've asked in the past for the rules to be so they test them on a regular basis. Because even the spring water can be diluted. I mean, PFAS travels very, very well through water. And if it rains and there's PFAS in the ground, that rain will push that PFAS through into the aquifer. So what's happening in areas like I was talking about up north is they're trying to figure out if they can dig a lower well where there's not PFAS yet, right? But the bigger question is, how do we clean it up and how do we mitigate it? Because if we don't, generations forever are going to be drinking this stuff, and it's not good for you.
This is scary stuff.
It's, you know, this is the stuff that, you know, we talk about fixing, right? We can't ignore it. We have to fix it.
So what do you, as a just an ordinary citizen, what do you recommend people drink? Tap water?
Yeah, I mean, if you...
How often is that tested?
Tap water? 2 or 3 times a day.
Oh, is it really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, we've got one of the best water departments in the world.
Okay, so they test it, but when it goes through my pipes and gets to my house, that's not tested at my faucet. And who knows what it picked up in the pipes leading to my house?
So there's two things to, you know, be rest assured upon. The first thing is that one of the things that we do after we purify the water is we put a little bit of chlorine in it. And that's so that while it's traveling through your pipes, if any impurities are in there, that chlorine is killing it, right? The second thing is if you have any feel where your pipe or you get your water out of the tap and you smell a little bit of chlorine, all you got to do is fill up a container, put it out overnight, and that chlorine will dissipate.
See, but we're so used to when we want to drink a water, we just get it.
Yeah,
we're not used to preparing it like my wife does with that giant bottle. She's got, well, I'm not used to preparing it. I want to drink a water. I'm thirsty. I grab it and I drink it.
You know, and for the most part, you're going to be absolutely fine. Because there's another thing that we do is we add a chemical, and I think I remember the chemical makeup, but I'm not going to say it. But so we put a chemical into the water, and what that is a binder agent, and that binder agent doesn't hurt the human body at all. But the binder agent allows any place where there's lead, it adheres to the lead. So if you had lead pipes, it adheres to the lead, and then it creates a border, a boundary, so that the rest of the water goes through without touching lead or having any flakes of lead off into the water. So we actually do a pretty amazing job of making sure that your water is the best tasting water in America and is the best water in America. And, you know, we've got the award to prove it, so.
Remember Cryptosporidium?
Oh, yeah.
A great bug on a great lake.
Yeah.
That was in the 80s, right? Cryptosporidium?
Yeah, that's actually what got us to build the water treatment plant that we have now.
Former St. Mayor John Dickert is here. The first half hour, we talked about water. And now I'm going to throw my bottled water in the garbage and just drink orange juice. I'm sure there's something wrong with that, too, with the pesticides and everything. Is there anything I could drink that's guaranteed to not kill me?
Look at the good old Racine water, tap water.
Yeah, but you said there's stuff in there too.
No. It's some of the best water in the world. Our purification system is 99.9 to the sixth power or something pure. It's good stuff.
Now, as people tell me, now I drink this bottled water I have here. People tell me the plastic from the bottle, if you leave it in too long, kind of filters into the water, right?
Sometimes there's some evidence that, especially if it's in sunlight, some of the plastic will break down, and that's what they call microplastics. And microplastics are in a lot of things because, you know, we allow garbage, and sometimes it just tends to get into our waterways. You see what's happened in the ocean. Sometimes that happens. The microplastics break down in the sun, and then fish will start eating them because they think it's plankton or a plant or something. This is the part that I talked about where, you know, you thought when we did the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, we kind of solved a lot of the problems. We've created new ones, and it's primarily just because people aren't understanding their actions and what those actions cost.
And if this didn't scare you enough, let's talk about cybersecurity. Now, this bothers me, and you know, I check every one of my accounts before I go to bed and when I wake up in the morning, because I just want to make sure I have a. My wife says, "Well, what are you checking it for? You know, it's fine." She never checks anything. I check it all the time because I want to make sure it's just as it should be. It doesn't take long for someone to hack into something and destroy your life. It's real quick.
Yeah.
That's on a small scale.
Yeah,
but I think you're talking about the larger scale, right?
Yeah, I guess the best way to put it is we had a meeting.
I'm not drinking this.
we had a meeting with myself and some of my good friends, mayors of Illinois, set up by another good friend of mine who's a mayor of one of the Illinois cities, and we met with a group of folks from NSA, CIA, and some folks that have been 20 or 30 years in cybersecurity work. We had a very, very difficult conversation, but a very good one about the fact that really we are not prepared for cyber attacks. They're happening. They're happening every single day in America. They're just what they call tester attacks. So the city of Racine was hit with, I believe it was a ransomware. RUSD was hit with some type of a cyber attack. There's a lot of communities around Wisconsin in our region that have been hit with these cyber attacks, and primarily what they're doing is they're testing. So we have three really bad guys out there that are not necessarily friends with America, and this is their way of creating a warfare without having war, and that is Russia, China, and Iran are the three probably biggest in the cyberspace. And, you know, anybody from, let's say somebody from Iran who wants to just kind of mess with the U.S. right now, they can be in the Caribbean on a computer, you know, masking everything that they're doing. And that's the tough part. That's why, you know, when you think about it, for the first time in the history of warfare, we have a small group of people that can really undermine the critical infrastructure of our community, our whole country for that matter. And it's a lot of people don't say it because what tends to happen is in a disaster, people don't necessarily want to figure out how to fix it. They just want to blame, right? They want to blame somebody or something. So what we are talking about doing, a friend of mine and I, who's just a retired mayor now, is starting to educate communities on this very issue and prepare for it. And, you know, we did some of that when I was mayor. We made sure that some critical infrastructure areas were prepared for it. I'm not going to mention what they are. But these things happen. TikTok is a great way for China, for instance, to get access to your information. But it's so good. They're so good at it that, you know, they shut down the East Coast a couple of years ago with their natural gas line. So there's all these little tests that happen out there, and they're prodding and finding out where they can go. But I asked, when I was mayor, I asked one of the folks from defense, you know, I said, how bad is this? And remember, this is over 10 years ago. She said, they can do anything they want. It's just a matter of what our response is. But how do you know who did it? And that's the critical issue. You don't know who did it.
So people say, so what? They have my name and address. So what? Is it a big so what, or is it important that they, especially the TikTokers, because they put information in there?
Well, it's not. They don't just have your name and address. They have all your data for your bank accounts, your credit union accounts. What they're going to try to hack is try to get around your passcode. A lot of them don't try to find your passcode. They just try to go around it, or they find it. You took a picture of something. It's on your phone. They're looking at that. So the problem
now that you're with the TikTokers. So what if you don't have any of the social media stuff?
It helps. I mean, it helps. There's no doubt about it. But our information is out there with credit cards, with health histories and things like that. So the idea here is, and China actually has a playbook for this. And the idea is to create as much disruption in the United States as possible, which takes our focus off of other global issues. So we're thinking about that. And the likelihood is the average American is really not prepared for their energy going down for a week or a month or 3 months. They're not prepared, you know, from a food perspective, even basic water issues, right? So what we're trying to do is educate people on how to be protected. And we're hoping to get out and start educating local communities on how to prepare for issues like this, because you know, the next war is probably not going to be fought with, you know, battleships and tanks. It's going to be fought with electronics. There's a Julia Roberts movie out on this that really demonstrates what would happen if this was done.
It's not the Pelican Brief, is it?
No, it's more recent than that. I'll look it up real quick.
Have to look at IMDb again. You brought up the Mark Ruffalo film Okay.
And the thing is, really what the key here is to be prepared, right? To give you an example, one of the things that they try to pitch on you when you're a mayor is to be a smart city. And I always said, I don't think smart cities are that smart, because what you're doing is you're allowing, you know, too many people to have access to your critical systems over a phone. The phone is completely insecure. Your iPhone is completely and utterly insecure.
Even when my password's 1234?
Yeah, you can have a password a mile long. It doesn't matter. It's unsecure. So the thing is, you don't want access. So one of the things that they did when they found out that the East Coast, for instance, was hacked and they shut down the natural gas lines in the middle of winter, by the way, a couple of years ago. It was in the middle of winter, and that was just a little, you know, little ploy. Hey, look what we can do. A local community person had their heat and air conditioning units on a smartphone, right? So this person in a public works department somewhere in America could get on a smartphone and he could turn on, you know, the heat or whatever on buildings throughout the mm-hmm. community. Well, they got into his phone through a social media network. They got into his phone because they went back and they tracked all this. It took them months to figure out how they did it, but they went into his phone. They got into the city. They sat in the city for about a month or two, and before they left, they dropped not only a little cyber bomb off, but they actually got into the backup storage that was supposed to be the safe area, and they blew all that up too. So they got into the city's servers, and they got into the backup servers. So they blew all that up before they left, then they went to the state. Got into the state. They're hanging around there for a couple months trying to figure out how to get to the feds. Once they got to the feds, they didn't want to leave a trail, so they just went into the federal program, found out eventually where the line shut off was for that natural gas line, and then shut it off for about a day or so just to say, look what we can do. So when we talk about...
Who's we?
Whoever this country was that did it.
Okay.
So, you know, there's a lot of this going on, and the stuff that you see today, and people say, oh, can you believe how we were shut down? I mean, you just saw it at, was it Spain last week? Oh, all the electricity went off, and my phone went off. Yeah, it probably wasn't just, you know, a squirrel getting in a...
we also don't know what happened in Newark Airport.
Right.
When they lost communication with the planes. They haven't told us yet what caused that problem.
For 90 seconds.
Yeah.
Can you imagine flying blind, all those planes
all those
for 90
planes
seconds?
Coming into Newark. Very busy airport. Yeah.
The administration's got to get moving into second gear here on this stuff.
Could that have been a cybersecurity problem?
We don't know yet. So this is the thing, is that you can't stop it, so you got to prepare for it.
You think they send tests out?
They do to send tests out every single day.
Just to make sure they can do it and let us know they can do it.
Mm-hmm.
John Dickert's with me here. He's a former mayor of Racine, but now he's into totally something different. He's a consultant, but we're talking about water and cybersecurity. I came in this morning feeling good. The sun was up. The air was crisp. I said, I'm going to have a great day. Now I'm scared to death. I'm afraid to drink the water. I brought a bottle of water with me this morning, Ice Mountain. I won't drink it. I'm going to toss it right in the can. And now I find out everybody's on my phone. Now, I don't do any banking on my phone. I use my credit card at only a few places. I pay cash at other places. I never use it at the gas station because they put those little scanning things on there, and I won't deal with that. So I never we use a supermarket. We'll use it, things like that, but not gasoline. And I don't use it at any place that I'm not familiar with. I want to make sure. But even that doesn't guarantee anything.
Yeah.
I remember once I used my credit card at Target once. And they were hacked. And you get this message in the mail, you better check security because we were hacked and all your information got out. Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Can't you even protect it? What are you doing over there?
They really can't.
There's no way to protect it, right?
Well, there's levels. They have levels of security, and a lot of people pay a lot of money to protect data. But it seems to me, and you know, I'm not a you know, NSA security analyst on this, but it seems to me that you really, it's just a matter of when and where they want to do it, and how they want to do it. But I will tell you this, you know, just to show you how how amazing this is. When I left as mayor and I was at the Great Lakes St. Lawrence Cities Initiative, this is how fast it goes. I went to D.C. I took the Honorable Mike Vandersteen from Sheboygan. He was our chair. We went out to Washington to start talking to people about the Great Lakes Water Initiative and making sure that they had the money in it. While we were out there, my staff got a call because I had taken a picture on Facebook and with Mike and posted it that we're out working the hill. My staff got a call, and this is how sophisticated they are. They said, hey, Melissa, she got an email, I apologize. She got an email. I'm in D.C. There's an emergency fundraiser going on. I need you to send a check for $10,000 so I can help out this senator at this location. Now, she didn't have the authority to do it, and Melissa was smart enough to know that that's not something that I would do. So she called me and said, do you know that this happened? And I said, we've been hacked. I said, you didn't get out any numbers or anything? She said, no, of course not. I said, all right, call the bank, shut down the system. I'll be back later tonight, and we'll deal with it tomorrow. They were that fast. Within an hour of me posting that Facebook link, they were smart enough to figure out where I worked, how I worked, what I was doing, and to get the right message into my staff and into email to potentially release $10,000.
You know how paranoid I am? If my stepson or my wife sends me a link on Facebook, I won't check, I won't do it. I will call them up and say, did you send this? Mm-hmm. Where did you get it from? And that's how paranoid I am. I don't even trust my wife or my stepson or my daughter, for that matter, to go send me anything because I don't know if they sent it. And I don't know where they got it from. When you start clicking on links, if you send me a photo to look at, oh, that's good. But when you start clicking on links, you don't know where it's taking you.
No.
Case in point, I worked at a radio station in Lake Geneva. There's only one station there. I worked there, and I get a call one weekend morning. The station's off the air. Russians hacked the radio station, shut it down, wiped all their computers clean. No more commercials, no more music. They wiped them clean, and they sent him a ransom.
Yeah.
And the FBI was called in because radio stations are federally licensed. So they called the FBI in, and they dealt with the hackers. Now, the owner of the station had the wherewithal to buy ransomware insurance, ransom insurance. So he had it. Mm-hmm. So the insurance company was going to pay him. The FBI negotiator talked him down to like $25,000 or something like that. I forget what the amount was, but talked him down greatly. They paid it. They gave him the codes to get everything back up and running. But it took weeks because each song had a different code. Each commercial had a different code. Yep. It took weeks to get that place back on the air again. And you know how they got hacked? Somebody at the station opened an email.
Yep.
When they did that, it set a time clock. And the time clock was 3 months.
Yeah.
And 3 months to the moment that they opened that email, boom, it went off.
Yeah.
Now, it's 3 months ago, so they can't remember who did it.
Well, they have to hide their tracks. So that's how they hide their tracks.
Yeah, it's the start of the clock.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I always tell everybody is, listen, if somebody calls and says, hello, is this Don Rosen? You don't say yes.
No.
You say who's calling. Because if you say yes, they can use that as an authorization for a bank or credit union to
continue. I read that. Yeah. They could take your yes voice and then they'll use that.
Yeah. So the thing is, nowadays, what I always tell people is, listen, be cautious. I'm not saying, you know, freak out and the whole world's falling in on you. Just be cautious. If you think something is odd, it probably is. If you think something is off, it probably is. So the best thing you can do is ask your bank or credit union to do dual-factor authentication for your accounts. So when you pull up an account on your phone or on your computer, they send you a link to your phone. And if you punch in that link, then, okay, they know it's you coming in. That's the safest way you can be for your bank or credit union.
But you know what? That's such a pain in the butt to do that. Occasionally, my banks and my credit card will send me, they test it every once in a while, they'll send you a link with a code, and you got to punch in that code.
Listen, it's a lot better than your accounts disappearing.
I know.
It's just the world we live in now. I mean, people laugh at me because I write out checks, but there's a reason. I'm very cautious about, you know.
I write out checks too. I don't do any banking online. Yeah. Not one thing. Yeah. You can't. They say, well, you know, and they always send you this thing every month. We want you to switch to digital from paper.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that. I'm not going to be paperless. I want checks. Now, checks have their own problem because if you put them in a mailbox, they had people breaking in and using acetone to wipe off the ink and then rewrite the checks and cash them. So it's got its own problems. But I use this pen. And this pen, you can't erase because it soaks into the paper.
Right.
But even that they could probably get around. There's no guarantee on anything anymore.
There's people trying to do everything. So I say, you know, the first thing is no Department of Revenue or IRS agent will ever call you. So if anybody ever calls you from either of those two, just hang up because they will never call you. I worked for the Department of Revenue. You know, I worked at the federal level with the Department of IRS. They will never, ever, ever, ever call you. No matter what you think, they won't call you. So just hang up on them. But the second thing is, if you think it's a scam or you think it's odd, and do you think that one of your relatives is calling you, just hang up and call them back.
You hear these stories, and there's a woman on YouTube. She just plays these hackers on the phone for everything they're worth, these scammers.
Yeah.
And she pretends to be an old lady. They want me to take $90,000. Which account? And the guy, the other one's from India or Pakistan or wherever. And he's talking away. You take it and you put it in this account. You do this. You do this. But I don't know which account. Then she does the Siri voice. Is account. Account means something at a bank. And she just plays these guys for all they're worth. And she knows it. Yeah. But a lot of people don't know it's a scam.
They make a lot of money off it. I mean, the gentleman that I take care of, John Schubert, you know, he had a relative that she lost $60,000 in 1 year. She thought all these scams were, you know, legitimate people. So, I mean, what we need here is just a base level of preparedness, right? That's the key. Instead of responding like we do right now, especially with the areas of global climate change issues, you know, we've seen all these floods and fires and everything else going on. You know, a lot of that stuff can be prepared for, just like when you're talking about your security and your financial security and your cybersecurity. Basic preparation and just basic knowledge goes a long, long way in stopping these folks. So that's what we're going to look to do, is to get out there and start working with local communities just to be basically prepared so that you really do a lot of prevention And whether it's water or cyber or anything, even your health, all of that stuff, a lot of it can be prepared for so you don't have to have the risk later.
I thank you for coming in.
Of course.
I think
glad I made your day.
No, and you did.